Chapter 7 Pitfalls and Tripwires. Rand felt the dragon scepter in his hand, felt every line of the carved dragons against his heron-branded palm, as clearly as if he were running his fingers over them. Yet it seemed someone else's hand. If a blade cut it off, he would feel the pain and keep going. It would be another's pain. He floated in the void, surrounded by emptiness beyond knowing, and Cydene filled him, trying to grind him to dust beneath steel-shattering cold and heat where stone would flash to flame, carrying the Dark One's taint on its flow, forcing corruption into his bones. Into his soul, he feared sometimes. It did not make him feel so sick to his stomach as it once had. He feared that even more. And larded through that torrent of fire, ice, and filth, life. That was the best word. Cydene tried to destroy him. Cydene filled him to overflowing with vitality. It threatened to bury him, and it enticed him. The war for survival, the struggle to avoid being consumed, magnified the joy of pure life. So sweet even with the foulness. What would it be like clean? Beyond imagining. He wanted to draw more, draw all there was. There lay the deadly seduction. One slip and the ability to channel would be seared out of him forever. One slip and his mind was gone, if he was not simply destroyed on the spot, and maybe everything around him too. It was not madness, focusing on the fight for existence. It was like high-walking blindfolded over a pit full of sharpened stakes, basking in so pure a sense of life that thinking of giving it up was like thinking of a world forever in shades of gray. Not madness. His thoughts whirled through his dance with Cydene, slid across the void. Anura peering at him with that Aes Sedai gaze. What was Berilane playing at? She had never mentioned an Aes Sedai advisor. And those other Aes Sedai in Kyrian. Where had they come from, and why? The rebels outside the city. What had emboldened them to move? What did they intend now? How could he stop them or use them? He was becoming good at using people. Sometimes he made himself sick. Savannah and the Shido? Ruark already had scouts on the way to Kinslayer's Dagger, but at best they could only find out where and when. The wise ones who could find out why would not. There were a lot of whys connected to Savannah. Elaine and Avienda. No, he would not think of them. No thoughts of them. None. Perrin and Fael. A fierce woman, Falcon by name and nature. Had she really attached herself to Kolivir just to gather evidence? She would try to protect Perrin if the Dragon Reborn fell. Protect him from the Dragon Reborn, should she decide it necessary. Her loyalties were to Perrin, but she would decide for herself how to meet them. Fael was no woman to do meekly as her husband told her, if such a woman existed. Golden eyes, staring challenge and defiance. Why was Perrin so vehement about the Aes Sedai? He had been a long time with Karuna and her companions on the road to Dumai's Wells. Could Aes Sedai really do with him what everybody feared? Aes Sedai. He shook his head without being aware. Never again. Never. To trust was to be betrayed. Trust was pain. He tried to push that thought away. It came a little too close to raving. Nobody could live without giving trust somewhere. Not just to Aes Sedai. Matt. Perrin. If he could not trust them. Min. Never a thought of not trusting Min. He wished she were with him instead of snugged in her bed. All those days of prisoner, days of worry, more for him than herself if he knew her. Days of being questioned by Galena and ill-treated when her answers failed to please. Unconsciously he ground his teeth. All of that, and the strain of being healed on top of it, had caught up with her at last. She had stayed by his side until her legs gave way, and he had to carry her to her bedchamber, with her sleepily protesting all the way that he needed her with him. No Min here. No comforting presence to make him laugh, make him forget the dragon reborn. Only the war with Sidene, and the whirlwind of his thoughts, and...
They must be done away with. You must do it. Don't you remember the last time? That place by the wells was a pittance. Cities burned whole out of the earth were nothing. We destroyed the world. Do you hear me? They have to be killed, wiped from the face.
Not his, that voice shouting inside his skull. Not Randall Thor. Luz Theron Telamon, more than 3,000 years dead, and talking in Randall Thor's head. The power often drew him out of his hiding place in the shadows of Rand's mind. Sometimes Rand wondered how that could be. He was Luz Theron reborn, the dragon reborn, no denying that. But everybody was someone reborn, 100 someones, 1,000, more. That was how the pattern worked. Everyone died and was reborn, again and again as the wheel turned, forever without end. But nobody else talked with who they used to be. Nobody else had voices in their heads, except madmen. What about me? Rand thought. One hand tightened on the dragon scepter, the other on his sword hilt.
What about you? How are we different from them?
There was only silence. Often enough, Luz Theron did not answer. Maybe it had been better when he never had.
Are you real?
The voice said at last, wonderingly. That denial of Rand's existence was as usual as refusing to answer.
Am I? I spoke to someone. I think I did. Inside a box. A chest.
Wheezing laughter, soft.
Am I dead or mad or both? No matter. I am surely damned. I am damned, and this is the pit of doom. I am damned.
Wild, that laughing now.
And this is the pit of...
Rand muted the voice to an insect's buzz, something he had learned while cramped into that chest. Alone, in the dark. Just him and the pain and the thirst and the voice of a long-dead madman. The voice had been a comfort sometimes, his only companion, his friend. Something flashed in his mind. Not images, just flickers of color and motion. For some reason, they made him think of Matt and Perrin. The flashes had begun inside the chest, them and 1,000 more hallucinations. In the chest, where Galena and Arian and Katarine and the rest stuffed him every day after he was beaten. He shook his head. No, he was not in the chest anymore. His fingers ached, clenched around scepter and hilt. Only memories remained, and memories had no force. He was not. If we must make this journey before you eat, let us make it. The evening meal is long finished for everyone else. Rand blinked, and Sulin stepped back from his stare. Sulin, who would stand eye to eye with a leopard. He smoothed his face, tried to. It felt a mask, somebody else's face.
Are you well? She asked.
I was thinking. He made his hands unknot, shrugged inside his coat. A better-fitting coat than the one he had worn from Dumai's Wells, dark blue and plain. Even after a bath, he did not feel clean, not with Sidene in him. Sometimes I think too much. Nearly 20 more maidens clustered at one end of the windowless, dark-paneled room. 8 gilded stand lamps against the walls, mirrored to increase the light, provided illumination. He was glad of that. He did not like dark places anymore. 3 of the Ashaman were there, too. The Aiel women to one side of the chamber, and the Ashaman to the other. Jonan Adly and Altaran, despite his name, stood with his arms folded, working eyebrows like black caterpillars in deep thought. Perhaps 4 years older than Rand, he was intent on earning the silver sword of the dedicated. Eben Hopwill carried more flesh on his bones and fewer blotches on his face than when Rand had first seen him, though his nose and ears still seemed the biggest part of him. He fingered the sword pin on his collar as if surprised to find it there. Fedwin Moore would have worn the sword as well, had he not been in a green coat suitable for a well-to-do merchant or a minor noble, with a little silver embroidery on cuffs and lapels. Of an age with Eben, but stockier, and with almost no blotches, he did not look happy that his black coat was stuffed into the leather scrip by his feet. They were the ones Luz Theron had been raving about, them and all the rest of the Ashaman. Ashaman, Aes Sedai. Anyone who could channel set him off, often as not.
"Think too much, Randall Thor."
Enyla gripped a short spear in one hand and her buckler and three more spears in the other, yet she sounded as if she were shaking a finger at him. The Ashaman frowned at her.
"Your trouble is you do not think at all."
Some of the other maidens laughed softly, but she was not making a joke. Shorter than any other maiden there, by at least a hand, she had hair as fiery as her temper and an odd view of her relationship to him. Her flaxen-haired friend Somara, who stood head and shoulders taller, nodded agreement. She held the same peculiar view. He ignored the comment, but could not stop a sigh. Somara and Enyla were the worst, yet none of the maidens could decide whether he was the Karakarn to be obeyed, or the only child of a maiden ever known to the maidens, to be cared for as a brother, bullied as a son for a few. Even Jelani there, not many years from playing with dolls, seemed to think he was her younger brother, while Corona, graying and nearly as leather-faced as Sulin, treated him like an older. At least they only did that around themselves, not often where other Aiel could hear. When it counted, he would be the Karakarn. And he owed it to them. They died for him. He owed them whatever they wanted. "I don't intend to spend all night here while you lot play Kiss the Daisies," he said. Sulin gave him one of those looks. In dresses or in cotton sore, women tossed those looks about like farmers scattering seed. But the Ashaman abandoned staring at the maidens and slung the straps of their scripts over their shoulders. "Push them hard," he had told Taim. "Make them weapons," and Taim had delivered. A good weapon moved as the man who held it directed. If only he could be sure it would not turn in his hand. He had three destinations tonight, but one of those the maidens could not be allowed to know. No one but himself. Which of the other two came first, he had decided earlier, yet he hesitated. The journey would be known soon enough, yet there were reasons to keep it secret as he could. When the gateway opened there in the middle of the room, a sweetish smell, familiar to any farmer, drifted through. Horse dung. Wrinkling her nose as she veiled, Sulin led half the maidens through at a trot. After a glance to him, the Ashaman followed, drawing deeply on the true source as they went, as much as they could hold. Because of that, he could feel their strength as they passed him. Without that, it took some effort to tell a man could channel. Longer still, unless he cooperated. None were near as strong as he. Not yet, anyway. There was no saying how strong a man would be until he stopped growing stronger. Fedwin stood highest of the three, but he had what Taim called a bar. Fedwin did not really believe he could affect anything at a distance with the power. The result was that at 50 paces, his ability began to fade, and at 100, he could not weave even a thread of Saiyadin. Men gained strength faster than women, it seemed, and a good thing. These three were all strong enough to make a gateway of useful size, if just barely in Jonan's case. Every Ashaman was, that he had kept.
"Kill them before it is too late, before they go mad," Luz Theron whispered. "Kill them. Hunt down Samael and Dimandred and all the Forsaken. I have to kill them all before it is too late."
A moment of struggle as he attempted to wrest the power away from Rand and failed. He seemed to try that more often of late, or to seize Saiyadin on his own. The second was a bigger danger than the first. Rand doubted that Luz Theron could take the true source away once Rand held it. He was not certain he could take it from Luz Theron either, if the other reached it first.
"What about me?" Rand thought again.
It was nearly a snarl, and no less vicious for falling short. Wrapped in the power as he was, anger spiderwebbed across the outside of the void, a fiery lace.
"I can channel too. Madness awaits for me, but it already has you. You killed yourself, Kinslayer, after you murdered your wife and your children, and the light alone knows how many others. I won't kill where I don't have to. Do you hear me, Kinslayer?"
Silence answered. He drew a deep, uneven breath. That web of fire flickered, lightning in the distance. He had never spoken to the man. It was the man, not just a voice, a man entire with memories. Never spoken to him like that before. Perhaps it might drive Luz Theron away for good. Half the man's mad rantings were tears over his dead wife. Did he want to drive Luz Theron away? His only friend in that chest? He had promised Sulin to count to 100 before following, but he did it by fives, then stepped more than 150 leagues to Camelin. Night had closed down on the royal palace of Andor, moonshadows cloaking delicate spires in golden domes, but a gentle breeze did nothing to break the heat. The moon hung above, still almost full, giving some light. Veiled maidens scurried around the wagons lined up behind the largest of the palace stables. The odor of the stable muck the wagons hauled away every day had long since soaked into the wood. The Ashaman had hands to their faces, Eben actually pinching his nose shut.
"The Karakarn counts quickly," Sulin muttered, but she lowered her veil.
There would be no surprises here. No one would stay near those wagons who did not have to. Rand let the gateway close as soon as the remaining maidens came through, right behind him, and as it winked out of existence, Luz Theron whispered,
"She's gone. Almost gone."
There was relief in his voice. The bond of Warder and Aes Sedai had not existed in the Age of Legends. Alana was not really gone, no more than she had been any time since bonding Rand against his will. But her presence had lessened, and it was the lessening that made Rand truly aware. You could become used to anything, begin taking it for granted. Near to her, he walked around with her emotions nestled in the back of his head, her physical condition as well, if he thought about it. And he knew exactly where she was as well as he knew his own hand's place. But just as with his hand, unless he thought about it, it just was. Only distance had any effect, but he could still feel that she was somewhere east of him. He wanted to be aware of her. Should Luz Theron fall silent and all the memories of the chest somehow be wiped from his head, he would still have the bond to remind him, never trust Aes Sedai. Abruptly, he realized that Jonan and Eben still held Saidin too.
"Release," he said sharply.
That was the command Taim used, and he felt the power vanish from them. Good weapons. So far.
"Kill them before it's too late," Luz Theron murmured.
Rand released the source deliberately and reluctantly. He always hated letting go of the life, the enhanced senses, of the struggle. Inside, though, he was tense, a jumper ready to leap, ready to seize it once more. He always was, now.
"I have to kill them," Luz Theron whispered.
Shoving the voice back, Rand sent one of the maidens, Neralia, a square-faced woman, into the palace and began pacing alongside the wagons, thoughts spinning again, faster than before. He should not have come here. He should have sent Fedwin with a letter. Spinning. Elaine, Avienda, Perrin, Fael, Anura, Berylaine, Matt.
Lighty should not have come.
Elaine and Avienda, Anura and Berylaine, Fael and Perrin and Matt. Flashes of color, quick motion just out of sight. A madman muttering angrily in the distance. Slowly he became aware of the maidens talking among themselves. About the smell, implying that it came from the Ashaman. They wanted to be heard, or they would have been using hand talk. There was moonlight enough for that. Moonlight enough to see the color in Eben's face, too, and how Fedwin's jaw was set. Maybe they were not boys any longer, not since Dumais Wells, certainly. But they were still only 15 or 16. Jonan's eyebrows had drawn down so far they seemed to be sitting on his cheeks. At least nobody had seized Saidin again. Yet. He started to step over to the three men, then raised his voice instead. Let them all hear. If I can put up with foolishness from maidens, so can you. If anything, the color in Eben's face deepened. Jonan grunted. All three saluted Rand with fist to chest. Then they turned to one another. Jonan said something in a low voice, glancing at the maidens, and Fedwin and Eben laughed. The first time they saw maidens, they had stumbled between wanting to goggle at these exotic creatures they had only read about, and wanting to run before the murderous Aiel of the stories killed them. Nothing much frightened them any more. They needed to relearn fear. The maidens stared at Rand and began talking with their hands, sometimes laughing softly. Wary of the Ashaman they might be, yet maidens being maidens, Aiel being Aiel, risk only made taunts more fun. Samara murmured aloud about Avienda settling him down, which earned firm nods of approval. Nobody's life was ever this tangled in the stories. As soon as Nerlea returned, saying that she had found Davram Bashir and Bale, the clan chief leading the Aiel here in Camelin, Rand took off his sword belt, and so did Fedwin. Jelani produced a large leather bag for the swords and the dragon scepter, holding it as if the swords were poisonous snakes, or perhaps long dead and rotten. Though in truth, she would not have held it so gingerly in either case. Putting on a hooded cloak that Karana handed him, Rand held his wrists together behind his back, and Sulin bound them with a cord. Tightly, muttering to herself.
This is nonsense. Even wetlanders would call it nonsense.
He tried not to wince. She was strong, and using every ounce of it.
You have run away from us too often, Randolph Thor. You have no care for yourself.
She considered him a brother of an age with herself, but irresponsible at times.
Fardarais Mai carries your honor, and you have no care.
Fedwin glowered while his own wrists were tied, though the maiden binding him hardly put out much effort. Watching, Jonan and Eben frowned deeply. They disliked this plan as much as Sulin did, and understood it as little. The dragon reborn did not have to explain himself, and the Kara Karn seldom did. No one said anything, though. A weapon did not complain. When Sulin stepped around in front of Rand, she took one look at his face, and her breath caught.
They did this to you, she said softly,
and reached for her heavy-bladed belt knife. A foot or more of steel, it was almost a short sword, though none but a fool would say that to an Aiel.
Pull up the hood, Rand told her roughly. The whole point of this is that no one recognized me before I reach Bale and Bashir.
She hesitated, peering into his eyes.
I said pull it up, he growled.
Sulin could kill most men with her bare hands, but her fingers were gentle, settling the hood around his face. With a laugh, Jelani snatched the hood down over his eyes.
Now you can be sure no one will know you, Randolph Thor. You must trust us to guide your feet.
Several maidens laughed. Stiffening, he barely stopped short of seizing Saidin. Barely. Luce Theron snarled and gibbered. Rand forced himself to breathe normally. It was not total darkness. He could see moonlight below the edge of the hood. Even so, he stumbled when Sulin and Anila took his arms and led him forward.
I thought you were old enough to walk better than that, Anila murmured in mock surprise.
Sulin's hand moved. It took him a moment to realize she was stroking his arm. All he could see was what lay just before him, the moonlit flagstones of the stable yard, then stone steps, floors of marble by lamplight, sometimes with a long runner of carpet. He strained his eyes at the movement of shadows, felt for the telltale presence of Saidin, or worse, the prickling that announced a woman holding Saidar. Blind like this, he might not know he was under attack until too late. He could hear the whisper of a few servants' feet as they hurried on nighttime chores, but no one challenged five maidens, apparently escorting two hooded prisoners. With Bale and Bashir living in the palace and policing Camelin with their men, doubtless stranger sights had been seen in these corridors. It was like walking a maze. But then he had been in one maze or another since leaving Emmons Field, even when he had thought that he walked a clear path. Would I know a clear path if I saw one, he wondered? Or have I been at this so long I'd think it was a trap?
There are no clear paths, only pitfalls and tripwires and darkness.
Luce Theron's snarl sounded sweaty, desperate, the way Rand felt. When Sulin finally led them into a room and shut the door, Rand tossed his head violently to throw back the hood, and stared. Bale and Davram he had expected, but not Davram's wife, Dira, nor Malayne, nor Dorinda.
I see you, Karakarn.
Bale, the tallest man Rand had ever seen, sat cross-legged on the green and white floor tiles in his cotton sore, an air about him even at ease that said he was ready to move in a heartbeat. The clan chief of the Goshin Aiel was not young, no clan chief was, and there was gray in his dark reddish hair, but anyone who thought him soft with age was in for a sad surprise.
May you always find water and shade. I stand with the Karakarn, and my spears stand with me.
Water and shade may all be very well, Davram Bashir said, hooking a leg over the gilded arm of his chair. But myself, I would settle for chilled wine. Little taller than Anila, he had his short blue coat undone, and sweat glistened on his dark face. Despite his apparent indolence, he looked even harder than Bale, with his fierce tilted eyes and his eagle's beak of a nose above thick gray-streaked mustaches.
I offer congratulations on your escape and your victory. But why do you come disguised as a prisoner?
I prefer to know whether he is bringing Aes Sedai down on us, Dira put in.
A large woman, gowned in gold-worked green silk, Fael's mother stood as tall as any maiden there, except Somara. Long black hair slashed with white at the temples, her nose only a little less bold than her husband's. Truth, she could give him lessons in looking fierce, and she was very like her daughter in one respect. Her loyalty was to her husband, not Rand.
You've taken Aes Sedai prisoner? Are we now to expect the entire White Tower to descend upon our heads?
If they do, Malayne said sharply, adjusting her shawl, they will be dealt with as they deserve. Sun-haired, green-eyed and beautiful, no more than a handful of years older than Rand by her face, she was a wise one and married to Bale. Whatever had caused the wise ones to change their view of Aes Sedai, Malayne, Amys, and Bear had changed the most.
What I wish to know, the third woman said, is what you will do about Kolaver Saigan.
While Dira and Malayne had presence, great presence, Dorinda outshone both, though it was difficult to see how exactly. The roofmistress of Smoke Springs Hold was a solid, motherly woman, much nearer handsome than pretty, with creases at the corners of her blue eyes and as much white in her pale red hair as Bale had gray. Yet of the three women, any eye with a brain behind it would have said she held sway.
Malayne says that Bear considers Kolaver Saigan of little importance, Dorinda went on. But wise ones can be as blind as any man when it comes to seeing the battle ahead and missing the scorpion underfoot.
A smile from Malayne robbed the words of their sting. Malayne's answering smile certainly said she took none.
A roof mistress's work is finding those scorpions before anyone is stung.
She also was Bale's wife, a fact that still disconcerted Rand, for all it had been her choice and Malayne's. Perhaps partly because it had been theirs. Among Aiel, a man had little say if his wife chose a sister wife. It was not a common arrangement, even among them.
Kolaver has taken up farming, Rand growled.
They blinked at him, wondering whether that was a joke.
The Sun Throne is empty again and waiting for Elaine.
He considered weaving a ward against listeners, but a ward could be detected by anyone searching, man or woman, and its presence would announce that something interesting was being said. Well, everything said here would be known from the Dragon Wall to the sea soon enough. Fedwin was already rubbing his wrists while Jelani sheathed her knife. No one looked at them twice. All eyes were on Rand. Frowning at Neralia, he waggled his bound hands until Sulin sliced the cords. "I didn't realize this was to be a family gathering." Neralia looked a trifle abashed, maybe, but no one else did.
"After you marry," Davram murmured with a smile, "you will learn you must choose very carefully what to keep from your wife."
Dira glanced down at him, pursing her lips.
"Wives are a great comfort," Bale laughed, "if a man does not tell them too much."
Smiling, Dorinda ran her fingers into his hair and gripped for a moment as though she meant to tug his head off. Bale grunted, but not for Dorinda's fingers alone. Melaine wiped her small belt knife on her heavy skirt and sheathed it. The two women grinned at one another over his head while he rubbed at his shoulder, where a small spot of blood stained his cotton sore. Dira nodded thoughtfully. It seemed she had just gotten an idea.
"What woman could I hate enough to marry her to the Dragon Reborn?" Rand said coldly.
That caused a silence solid enough to touch. He tried to take rein on his anger. He should have expected this. Melaine was not just a wise one. She was a dreamwalker, as were Amys and Bear. Among other things, they could talk to one another in their dreams, and to others. A useful skill, though they had only used it for him once. It was Wise One's business. No wonder at all that Melaine was abreast of everything that had happened. No wonder that she told Dorinda everything. Wise One's business or no, the two women were best friends and sisters rolled into one. Once Melaine let Bale know of the kidnapping, of course he had told Bashir. Expecting Bashir to keep that from his wife was like expecting him to keep it secret that their house was on fire. Inch by inch, he drew the anger in, forced it down.
"Has Elaine arrived?"
He tried to make his voice casual, and missed. No matter. There were reasons everyone knew for him to be anxious. Andor might not be as unquiet as Kyrian, but Elaine on the throne was the fastest way to settle both lands. Maybe the only way.
"Not yet," Bashir shrugged. "But tales have come north of Aes Sedai with an army somewhere in Murindi, or maybe Altara. That could be young Matt and his Band of the Red Hand, with the daughter heir and the sisters who fled the tower when Swan Sanche was deposed."
Rand rubbed his wrists where the cords had chafed. All that captive rigmarole had been on the chance Elaine was here already. Elaine and Avienda. So he could come and go without them learning of it till he was gone. Maybe he would have found a way to peek at them. Maybe. He was a fool, and no maybe about that.
"Do you mean those sisters to swear oath to you, too?"
Dira's tone was icy as her face. She did not like him. As she saw it, her husband had set off down a road that likely would end with his head on a pike over a gate in Tarvalen, and Rand had put his feet on that road.
"The White Tower will not hold still for your coercing Aes Sedai."
Rand made her a small bow, and burn her if she took it for mocking.
"Dira Nir Galeen Tabashir never gave him a title, never even used his name.
She could as well have been talking to a footman, and not a very intelligent or trustworthy one.
Should they choose to swear, I'll accept their oaths. I doubt many are exactly eager to return to Tarvalen. If they choose otherwise, they can go their own way, so long as they don't put themselves against me."
"The White Tower has put itself against you," Bale said, leaning forward with his fists on his knees.
His blue eyes made Dira's voice seem warm.
"An enemy who comes once will come again, unless they are stopped. My spears will follow wherever the Karakarn leads."
Melaine nodded, of course. She very likely wanted every last Aes Sedai shielded and kneeling under guard, if not bound hand and foot. But Dorinda nodded as well, and Sulin, and Bashir knuckled his mustaches thoughtfully. Rand did not know whether to laugh or weep.
"Don't you think I've enough on my plate without a war against the White Tower?" Elida grabbed my throat and was slapped down,
the ground erupting in fire and torn flesh, ravens and vultures gorging. How many dead? Slapped down.
"If she has sense enough to stop there, I will too."
So long as they did not ask him to trust. The chest. He was shaking his head, half aware of Luz Theron suddenly moaning about the dark and the thirst. He could ignore, he had to ignore, but not forget, or trust. Leaving Bale and Bashir arguing over whether Elida did have sense enough to stop, now that she had begun, he moved to a map-covered table against the wall, beneath the tapestry of some battle where the white line of Andor stood prominent. Apparently Bale and Bashir used this room for their planning. A little rooting around found the map he needed, a large roll displaying all of Andor from the Mountains of Mist to the River Arranin, and parts of the lands to the south as well, Ghiladan and Altara and Murindi. "The women held captive in the Tree Killer's lands are allowed to cause no trouble, so why should any others?" Malaine said, apparently in answer to something he had not heard. She sounded angry.
"We will do what we must, dear to Bashir," Dorinda said calmly.
She was seldom anything but.
"Hold to your courage, and we will arrive where we must go." "When you leap from a cliff," Dira replied, "it is too late for anything but holding to your courage, and hoping there's a haywain at the bottom to land in."
Her husband chuckled as though she was making a joke. She did not sound it. Spreading the map out and weighting the corners with ink jars and sand bottles, Rand measured off distances with his fingers. Matt was not moving very fast if rumor placed him in Altara or Murindi. He took pride in how fast the band could march. Maybe the Aes Sedai were slowing him, with servants and wagons. Maybe there were more sisters than he had thought. Rand realized his hands were clenched into fists and made them straighten. He needed Elaine, to take the throne here and in Kyrian. That was why he needed her. Just that. Avienda. He did not need her, not at all. And she had made it clear she had no need for him. She was safe away from him. He could keep them both safe by keeping them as far from him as possible. Light, if he could only look at them. He needed Matt, though, with Perrin being stubborn. He was not sure how Matt had suddenly become expert on everything to do with battle, but even Bashir respected Matt's opinions. About war, anyway.
"They treated him as Datsang,"
Sulin growled, and some of the other maidens growled wordlessly in echo.
"We know," Malaine said grimly. "They have no honor." "Will he truly hold back after what you describe?"
Dira demanded in disbelieving tones.
The map did not extend far enough south to show Ilion. No map on the table showed any part of that country, but Rand's hand drifted down across Murindi, and he could imagine the Dwalon Hills, not far inside Ilion's borders, with a line of hill forts no invading army could afford to ignore. And some 250 miles to the east, across the plains of Moredo, an army such as had not been seen since the nations gathered before Tarvalin in the Aiel War, maybe not since Artur Hawkwing's day. Tyrin, Kyrianin, Aiel, all poised to smash into Ilion. If Perrin would not lead, then Matt must. Only there was not enough time. There was never enough time.
"Burn my eyes," Davram muttered. "You never mentioned that, Malaine. Lady Caroline and Lord Toram camped right outside the city, and High Lord Darlin as well. They didn't come together by chance. Not right at this time, they did not. That's a pit of vipers to have on your doorstep, whoever you are."
"Let the Al-Ghaid Siswai dance," Bale replied. "Dead vipers bite no one."
Samael had always been at his best defending. That was Luz Theron's memory, from the War of the Shadow. With two men inside one skull, maybe it was to be expected that memories would drift between them. Had Luce Theron suddenly found himself recalling herding sheep, or cutting firewood, or feeding the chickens? Grant could hear him faintly, raging to kill, to destroy. Thoughts of the Forsaken almost always drove Luce Theron over the brink.
"Dira Tabashir speaks truly," Bale said. "We must stay on the path we have begun until our enemies are destroyed, or we are."
"That is not how I meant it," Dira said dryly. "But you are right. We have no choice now. Until our enemies are destroyed, or we are."
Death, destruction, and madness floated in Rand's head as he studied the map. Samael would be at those forts soon after the army struck. Samael with the strength of a Forsaken and the knowledge of the Age of Legends. Lord Brend, he called himself, one of the Council of Nine, and Lord Brend they called him who refused to admit the Forsaken were loose. But Rand knew him. With Luce Theron's memory, he knew Samael's face, knew him to the bone.
"What does Dailan Taravin intend with Naon Aron and Alenia Sarand?" Dorinda asked. "I do confess I do not understand this shutting people away."
"What she does there is hardly important," Davram said. "It is her meetings with those Aes Sedai that concern me."
"Dailan Taravin is a fool," Mullane muttered. "She believes the rumors about the Karakhan kneeling to the Amarlin seat. She will not brush her hair unless those Aes Sedai give her permission."
"You mistake her," Dira said firmly. "Dailan is strong enough to rule Andor. She proved that at Arengil. Of course she listens to the Aes Sedai. Only a fool ignores Aes Sedai. But to listen is not to obey."
The wagons that had been brought from Dumai's Wells would have to be searched again. The fat little man Angreal had to be there somewhere. None of the sisters who escaped could have had a clue what it was. Unless, perhaps, one had stuck a souvenir of the Dragon Reborn in her pouch. No, it had to be in the wagon somewhere. With that, he was more than a match for any of the Forsaken. Without it, death, destruction, and madness. Suddenly, what he had been hearing rushed forward. "What was that?" he demanded, turning from the ivory-inlaid table. Surprised faces turned toward him. Jonan straightened from where he had been slouching against the doorframe. The maidens, squatting easily on their heels, suddenly appeared alert. They had been talking idly among themselves. Even they were wary around him now. Fingering one of her ivory necklaces, Mullane shared a decided look between Bale and Davram, then spoke before anyone else.
"There are 9 Aes Sedai at an inn called the Silver Swan, in what Davram Bashir calls the New City."
She said the word inn in an odd way, and city as well. She had only known them from books before coming across the Dragon Wall.
"He and Bale say we must leave them alone until they do something against you. I think you have learned about waiting for Aes Sedai, Randall Thor."
"My fault," Bashir sighed, "if fault there is. Though what Mullane expects to do, I can't say. 8 sisters stopped at the Silver Swan almost a month ago, just after you left. Now and then a few more come or go, but there are never more than 10 at one time. They keep to themselves, cause no trouble, and ask no questions that Bale or I can learn. A few Red Sisters have come into the city as well. 2. Those at the Silver Swan all have warders, but these never do. I'm sure they are Reds. 2 or 3 appear, ask after men heading for the Black Tower, and after a day or so they leave. Without learning much, I'd say. That Black Tower is as good as a fortress for holding in secrets. None of them has made trouble, and I would rather not trouble them until I know it is necessary."
"I didn't mean that," Rand said slowly. He sat down in a chair opposite Bashir, gripping the carved arms till his knuckles hurt. Aes Sedai gathering here, Aes Sedai gathering in Kyrian. Happenstance? Luce Theron rumbled like thunder on the horizon about death and betrayal. He would have to warn Taim. Not about the Aes Sedai at the Silver Swan. Taim certainly knew already. Why had he not mentioned it? About staying away from them, keeping the Ashaman away.
If Demise Wells was to be an end, there could be no new beginnings here. Too many things seemed to be spinning out of control. The harder he tried to gather them all in, the more there were, and the faster they spun. Sooner or later, everything was going to fall and shatter. The thought dried his throat. Tom Marilyn had taught him to juggle a little, but he had never been very good. Now he had to be very good indeed. He wished he had something to wet his throat. He did not realize he had spoken that last aloud until Jelani straightened from her crouch and strutted across the room to where a tall silver pitcher stood on a small table. Filling a hammered silver goblet, she brought it back to Rand with a smile, her mouth opening as she proffered it. He expected something rude, but a change came over her face. All she said was, "Karakarn," then went back to her place with the other maidens, so dignified it seemed she was imitating Dorinda, or maybe Dira. Samara gestured in hand talk, and suddenly every maiden was red-faced and biting her lips to keep from laughing. Every maiden but Jelani, who was just red-faced. The wine punch tasted of plums. Rand could remember fat, sweet plums from the orchard across the river when he was young, climbing the trees to pick them himself. Tilting his head back, he drained the goblet. There were plum trees in the two rivers, but no orchards of them, and certainly not across any river. "Keep your bloody memories to yourself," he snarled at Luce Theron. The man in his head laughed at something, giggling quietly to himself. Bashir frowned at the maidens, then glanced at Bale and his wives, all impassive as stone, and shook his head. He got on well with Bale, but Aiel in general mystified him. "Since no one is bringing me any drink," he said, rising, and went to pour his own. He took a long swallow that wet his heavy mustaches. "Now that's cooling. Taim's way of enrolling men seems to sweep up every fellow who'd like to follow the Dragon Reborn. He has delivered a goodly army to me, men who lack whatever it is your Ashaman need. They all talk wide-eyed about walking through holes in the air, but none has been anywhere near the Black Tower. I'm trying out a few thoughts young Matt had." Rand waved that away with the empty goblet. "Tell me about Dailin." Dailin of House Taravin would be next in line for the throne should anything happen to Elaine. But he had told her he was having Elaine brought to Camelin. "If she thinks she can take the Lion Throne, I can find a farm for her, too."
"Take the throne?" Dira said incredulously, and her husband laughed out loud.
"I have no understanding of Wetlander ways," Bale said, "but I do not think that is what she has done."
"Far from it."
Davram carried the pitcher over to pour more punch for Rand.
"Some lesser lords and ladies who thought to curry favor proclaimed for her at Arengil. She moves quickly, Lady Dailin. Within 4 days, she had the two leaders hanged for treason to the daughter heir Elaine, and ordered another 20 flogged."
He chuckled approvingly. His wife sniffed. Likely she would have had the road lined with gibbets all the way from Arengil to Camelin. "Then what was that about her ruling Andor?" Rand demanded. "And imprisoning Elenia and Neon?"
"They are the ones who tried to claim the throne," Dira said, dark eyes sparkling angrily.
Bashir nodded. He was much calmer.
"Only 3 days ago, when word arrived of Kolaver's coronation, and the rumors from Kyrian that you had gone to Tar Valon began to sound more real. With trade beginning again, there are so many pigeons in the air between Kyrian and Camelin you could walk on their backs."
Putting the pitcher back, he returned to his chair.
"Neon proclaimed for the Lion Throne in the morning, Elenia before midday, and by sunset Dailin, Pelavar, and Luon had arrested them both. They announced Dailin as regent the next morning, in Elaine's name, until Elaine returns. Most of the houses of Andor have declared support for Dailin. I think some would like to have her take the throne herself, but Arengil keeps even the most powerful careful of their tongues."
Closing one eye, Bashir pointed at Rand.
"You, they do not mention at all. Whether that is good or bad, it will take a wiser head than mine to say."
Dira offered a cool smile, looking down that nose of hers.
"Those lick-spittles you allowed to make free of the palace have all fled the city, it seems. Fled Andor, some of them, according to rumor. You should know they were all behind either Elenia or Neon."
Rand carefully set his full goblet on the floor beside his chair. He had only let Lyra and Aramilla and the rest remain in order to try pushing Dailan and those who supported her into cooperation with him. They would never have left Andor to the likes of Lord Lyr. With time and Elaine's return, it might yet work. But everything was whirling faster and faster, whirling away from his fingers. There were a few things he could control, though.
"Fedwin there is an Ashaman," he said. "He can bring messages to me in Kyrian if there's need."
That with a glare from Elaine, who returned the blandest sort of look. Dira studied Fedwin as she might a dead rat some overeager dog had dropped on her rug. Davram and Bale were more considering. Fedwin tried to stand straighter under their gaze.
"Don't let anyone know who he is," Rand went on. "No one. That's why he isn't wearing black. I am taking two more to Lord Samaradrid and High Lord Wyroman tonight. They'll have need when they face Samael in the Dwarlon Hills. I will be busy chewing on Kyrian for a while yet, it seems. And maybe Andor, too."
"Does this mean you will send the spears forward at last?" Bale said. "You give the orders tonight?"
Rand nodded, and Bashir gave a great hoot of laughter.
"Now that calls for a good wine. Or it would if it wasn't hot enough to make a man's blood thick as porridge."
Laughter slid into a grimace.
"Burn me, but I wish I could be there. Still, I suppose holding Camlann for the Dragon Reborn is no small thing."
"You always want to be where the swords are bared, my husband."
Dira sounded quite fond.
"The Fifth," Bale said. "You will allow the Fifth in Ilion, when Samael has fallen?"
Aiel Custom allowed taking the fifth part of all that was in a place, taken by force of arms. Rand had forbidden it here in Camlann. He would not give Elaine a city looted even that much.
"They will have the Fifth," Rand said.
But it was not of Samael or Ilion that he thought.
"Bring Elaine quickly, Matt."
It ran wild in his head, across Luz Theron's cackling.
"Bring her quickly, before Andor and Kyrian both erupt in my face."